Hey coconuts, yep, today we're going to focus on the FIRE movement once again. But today we're going to focus on a sub-segment of the FIRE movement known as Lean FIRE. So what does that mean, right? Oh, FIRE now, a lot of FIRE. Got Lean FIRE, Fat FIRE, Barista FIRE, Farmer FIRE, whatever lah. There's been a lot of segmentation, different ideas around FIRE, but they all anchor on this idea that, you know, you want to get yourself to a good financial situation such that you can quit your job and do what you want to do, or at least retire early, right? So, of course, we've done quite a few episodes, but I brought a friend on the show, Chris, right, from Honey Money. If you have not checked out his YouTube channel, you should check him out. And he's talked a lot about this. But today, we're going to focus on this specific sub-segment called Lean FIRE, which to me is highly attainable. A lot of people can achieve this. And it is not about after achieving this, then you stop doing any other thing. But I do feel that for the crazy, intense kind of Singaporean life, if you achieve Lean FIRE, or at least have this vivid understanding that, hey, you can actually do this, maybe not in Singapore, but somewhere else, you find it a lot more comfortable. And I do feel you feel a little bit safer to live a life.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
So good morning, everyone, and welcome you to another day with the Financial Coconut. In our podcast, debunking financial myths, discovering best financial practices, and discussing financial strategies that fits our unique life. You get it, ultimately empowering us to create a life we love while managing our finances well. My name is Reggie, aka your chief financial coconut, and today we have a friend on the show, Chris from Honey Money, and we are going to talk about Lean FIRE, right? So without further ado, welcome, Chris. So maybe to begin, you can introduce us a little bit about yourself, Chris.
All right, so my name is Christopher. You can call me Chris. I do run a YouTube channel focusing on personal finance, investing, credit cards, early retirement, and all that stuff. So if you're a fan of Reggie's Financial Coconut podcast, most likely you'll be a fan of my channel as well, because we discuss similar financial concepts in a more personal manner that can be applicable to your personal life. So that's what I'm doing as a side hustle currently. I do have a full-time job, but this is YouTube, right? YouTube is more like some things that I'm going to discover for myself. And maybe that's what I want to do when I have early retired. So that's a quick intro about myself.
YouTube is a full-time job. The job is the full-time income. It's different. Wait. Just curious, Chris, what is the most popular topic on your channel so far?
So far, the most popular topic on my channel, I'll see that has consistently good views, are topics about CPF and retirement. Because I guess CPF is kind of a topic that everyone can relate to. Everyone needs to contribute to CPF if you're working in Singapore, whether you like it or not. And even as a permanent resident, if you're new to Singapore, you also have to contribute to CPF because it forms part of your retirement funds in the late game. Okay, let's say if you're an early working adult, then CPF definitely takes off a huge chunk of it. And that's why a lot of people are concerned, how is the CPF affecting their lives? But I don't think today we may be touching a lot on CPF. We're touching on some other topics.
Okay, great. So I think today we're going to spend some time to talk a little bit about FIRE. But specifically, we want to talk about Lean FIRE. Because, you know, you went on another show.
And you can see. It's quite public.
So, yeah, guy went on CNA and then did some interview and, you know, people started flaming him. Any thoughts? I'll give you a platform to share your thoughts.
Thoughts on this. Actually, I was prepared to get flamed because personally, when I do talk about early retirement FIRE stuff, I believe it's really against the norm, and the normal people can't see it that way, right? They are so ingrained into their lifestyle that working till 65 and doing what other people are doing is quite normal. And if you're going against the norm, there must be mentally something wrong with you. Or either that, you have some privilege that the normal people do not have. So I went on the show to talk about it, just to share my point of view, right? How I see as an average income salary worker. Lo and behold, some people are really inspired by it, while the rest of the majority may not really understand that idea. And that led to a lot of criticism. In fact, if you look at the Facebook post, it's one of the most hated posts of CNA, actually.
Really? If I may say.
CNA may actually got to know me because of your podcast, you know, because
you.
Of my earlier interview, Chills with TFC, right? I did come on the show before, talk about that 1 million by 35 target, but that was a more balanced podcast, you see, while CNA one is more sensationalized for the general public.
Of course, so, we are a better production team.
I have to agree on that.
Thank you. We have juice. Yeah, all the CNA guests, they all take from us one. They confirm going through our library. It's like, they confirm looking through our library. It's like, why have we recorded, blah, blah, blah. Because all of them are repeat, or almost all of them are, right? So, but hey, very good. Very happy that a lot of the guests are going on to bigger platforms. So yeah, CNA, maybe, you know, we can do some collab. Don't flame too much. If not, no more collab. But focus on today's topic. I think when I saw that you went through all that, I was like, oh yeah, maybe I should get Chris on to talk a little bit more about this. And today we want to focus on Lean FIRE, right? Specifically, it's a sub-segment of FIRE. So maybe we can begin by defining what is Lean FIRE. How is it different from FIRE?
So FIRE, I think you can classify it into a few different categories. One of it is Lean. One of it is fat, right? So lean meaning you are living on a very skinny type of budget, you see. It's as simple as it gets. Fat FIRE means you have a lot to spend, okay? You can spend lavishly. You can spend in abundance. Lean FIRE generally means you have a tighter budget. You cannot spend as much as what the bigger FIRE people are doing because your FIRE is so small, very lean, right? So it's really living on a tighter budget. But that doesn't mean that you are poor, you know, because the fact that you are able to FIRE, that means you already have quite a sizable investment portfolio that is generating cash flow for you, such that it enables you to really quit your job and depend on a very minimal expenses lifestyle. And that will be called a lean FIRE.
Are you already at lean FIRE? Or are you like working towards it? Because I am already at lean FIRE. That means if I do the lean thing, then I'm done. You know what I mean?
To be honest, I never really look at lean FIRE because my purpose was always looking at barista FIRE. I always wanted to like
what
do
the hell is a barista
else.
FIRE? Tell me, what, bro? There's lots of FIRE out there. Yes, what is a barista FIRE?
Too many types.
Yes.
Barista FIRE, it's not what you think. It's not like you need to work as a barista, then you can FIRE. It's quite the opposite, right? It's because you have quite a good investment portfolio size. That's why it can enable you to be a barista. Now, not putting down on any barista right here, but barista generally don't earn like a high salary, right? So if you were doing a barista job for full time, you will not be considered like really the affluent community. And if there is your interest and you want to do full-time, sure, go ahead. I mean, it's really your passion, right? But if you want to like tell your wife, I want to quit my job to be a barista, she will be crazy.
She will quit
shouting
you,
at you,
quit
right?
You.
If you can tell your wife, okay, I make sure I have a $1 million portfolio, then I go and be a barista, then maybe your wife is not so unhappy because she knows that at least you have something, you have an investment going on that can generate sufficient cash flow such that you don't have to rely 100% on your barista job. And that is why it's always like a balance, you see. You can earn a lower wage while your investment can give you sufficient cash flow to pay for other expenses in your life. So that was Barista FIRE.
Okay, great. So that is Barista FIRE. We can talk about that another time. But focusing on Lean FIRE, right? Chris has 3 points for us. What is point number one? One of the major important thing that you need to know when you're looking at Lean FIRE?
So the number one most important thing is how much do you need to actually live comfortably? Okay, because
keyword is comfortably, right?
Comfortably, yeah. Very important. Must stress comfortably.
Comfortably, yes.
Not living poorly in unhygienic and dirty conditions, you don't even have a shelter, live comfortably in a clean place, clean shelter, sufficient food, all that stuff, basic needs. Okay, because enough is different for different people, right?
Exactly. I want to push a little bit on that. Like, what is that? Isn't that considered quite a stereotypical way of comfortably. Hey, because if you're a farmer, right, that means you farmer fire, I don't know, you know, like same idea as barista fire, right?
I heard
there's something like that also. I just thought about it.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. We extend the topic. Okay, let's say you farmer fire and you go work in the farm, you go into the suburbs. Like I've been traveling to a lot of all these kind of smaller places and you see lots of farms around, right? Definition of comfort then becomes very different. You know, like it's I mean, you cannot expect the farm to be squeaky clean, right? You're in the farm. Everything is dirt, it's fertilizer, you know, it's mosquitoes, it's everywhere. All right. So you know, I think that's the part that we need to really clarify on what is considered comfortable.
Yeah, so comfortable is that you don't have to scream on yourself, meaning that you need to look at every expense and see, okay, maybe today I need to eat cup noodles, maybe tomorrow I need to eat white bread with kaya. Okay, no, comfortably means that at least you can afford 3 meals or maybe 2 meals for some people who are intermittent fasting, that they don't have to really sacrifice their lifestyle. Okay, because if you are sacrificing your lifestyle for fire, I think generally that is not very healthy in the first place. Secondly, you don't derive that enjoyment, right? Then people will be looking at you like, what's the point of firing early when you are living so cheapskate? It's not really about scrimping on anything like cheapest price and all that. It's more for looking at the best value for money. Okay, because best value for money is quite different from different people. I know in the past we always say something like hawker center food is very cheap, very affordable. But in recent times with inflation, can you really say that hawker food is very cheap? So last time we always say hawker center food most affordable, but I think recently, if we look at fast food, you can start to see that if you actually look at their value set meals, actually they are quite value for money because they come with drinks, they come with fries, come with everything in an air-conditioned environment that is comfortable. So do you want to enjoy your meal in like an air-conditioned environment having your fast food, or do you want to enjoy your meal in a hawker center where you have to find seats and then you have to buy your drink on a separate purchase? I think that is for your own comparison of value. I think the dynamics have shifted, right? We cannot always look at the absolute cheapest, because that is, although that may be the cheapest in price, but that may not be the best value.
Definitely. And I think people, different people value it differently. I mean, I've asked many people, right, how do they spend their money and how do they value things? And you realize that there's a mirage of different ways to value. And it's not just about, like what you say, it's not just about cheapest. It's not just about the volume that you can get. Okay, pretty interesting. So then what is your idea of comfort then?
Okay, so if we look at personal profile and demographic, for myself as a salaried worker in 30s and still not married yet. So I would say that as a single individual, most likely your expenses are quite minimal because you don't have to care so much about other people's expense, your family expense and all that. If you're talking about transportation, what is comfortable to you? In Singapore, at least, I think public transportation is super accessible. So if you're just a normal salaried worker, you don't really need a car as a single, right? Unless you want to impress people you don't like with the money you don't have. So that is on the transport part. On the food part, right? Since you are a single, most likely you don't have economies of scale if you're cooking a meal. Because when we're talking about cooking, we always talk about economies of scale. If you're cooking for a family, it's much more cheaper per person compared to eating out. So if you're a single person, most likely you're eating out, taking out a loan, or you just eat what your family cooks, right? I mean, that is the best way to save money, unless you have other better ways. So for myself, right, I think $1,000 excluding family allowance as for a single is enough, because most of your expenses are really minimal. You don't have to like go and keep going out. Because as an introvert myself, right, I don't have to like keep going out and meeting friends and socializing. Those are quite occasionally, but it's not like every weekend you need to hit the club, hit the bars, go for drinking sessions and all that stuff. Because it depends on your personal lifestyle. The more you go out, definitely you need to spend money. Unless you're going out to a park, going to the beach, going to cycle, all these low-cost activities. So I think $1,000 is quite sufficient for a single individual in Singapore.
The general idea is to get clarity on the life that you want, or at least the current reality of your life, right? So, right, but I think we both can caveat the reality that your life changes. You know, you may have a partner, you may have kids, and you know that will then totally change what is defined as comfort, right? Because recently, I think I had another discussion with some people about happiness, right? So, you know, all these like iffy topic, right? Happiness, yeah. What's considered happiness? And she was saying, oh, you know, when I was younger, my happiness is this. And then when I get older, my happiness, you know, now is different. So I do different things. And for me, you realize the fundamental in change is not in the habits to pursue that happiness, but it's in the fundamental definition of happiness itself. Because when you redefine happiness, your habits follow along. So if you redefine comfort, your habits will follow along. But at least that is point number one. How much do you really need to live comfortably? Okay? Give us point number two. Yeah, for lean fire.
Okay, so point number two is how much do you need to accumulate? Because I think we all talk about you need to understand how much do you need to spend. The next step, taking it further, how much do you need to accumulate to generate how much you need to spend? And that is a cash flow generation exercise. And we can talk more about this.
Afterward, from our sponsor. Yeah, Chris, avid listener, so he knows.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
All right, so coming back to the cash flow generation, generally in FIRE, we always talk about this thing called the 4% withdrawal rule. Okay, some people call it the safe withdrawal rate. And why 4%? I'm not going to go in detail, but there's actually a Trinity study done behind it. But it was quite a long ago study that was done in the 90s. But generally, what the study says is that if you actually have a portfolio and you are able to withdraw 4% out of the portfolio per year, you can live indefinitely with a success rate of above 95%. So that's what the study say, not what I say. Very important.
Mm-hmm. Are there certain assumptions in the studies that you think we should know?
Certain assumptions in the study is that you actually put all this portfolio in investments, and the investments can come in a lot of forms. Some of you invest in the stock market, some of you invest in property, but generally you need to keep it in investment and not in like non-cash flow generating assets, okay? Not like in gold bars, not like in your own state property, because all these things need to grow in value. And in order to grow in value, right, if we are just talking about investing in the stock market, an index fund that can generate you around 8% annual return, if you are taking out 4%, that means you are factoring in 4% for the annual inflation, which is quite comfortable. If we are talking about past year's data, such a crazy year, right? We are seeing like US inflation hit as close as 10%.
Yes.
So that is where the critics will start to come in and say, your index fund cannot even grow above the inflation rate. So how are you going to use a safe withdrawal rate and you consider 4% safe? So that is where a lot of critics come in. So if we are using the 4% withdrawal rate, right? So let's say using my own example, a $1,000 per month. How much do I need in a year? That will be just 12 months times 1,000, and that is 12K. And if we take 12K divide by the 4% rate, that will give you a portfolio that you need of $300,000. So if you need like 1,000 SGD, that means you need $300,000 worth of portfolio for you to generate $1,000 of living expenses per month, and you have a 95% success rate of continuously living on this budget with that portfolio without any depletion of the capital. So that is the simple way I would say for this 4% rule.
Okay, so then you have some people like me, lah, right? Essentially, we practice the higher order, the dual arbitrage situation where you have 300,000 and then you can just kind of sit around, right, somewhere else. You don't need to be in Singapore.
Adding to that, right, I think I want to talk about the 4% first, because some people will criticize the 4% is too aggressive. Of course, you can use your own 3% rate, right? If you think 4% is too aggressive, you can use 2.5%. That is all your own calculation. And then if we want to take the previous annual expense of 12K divided by 3%, your portfolio needs to be 400,000. So that is how you want to adjust it based on your own circumstances. 400,000, actually, if you look at it in the long term, not as big of a difference. But I do want to talk about geographical arbitrage, because this is one thing that actually makes a big difference. It makes even more difference than the 3% versus 4% safe withdrawal rate, because we are talking about high cost of living versus low cost of living cities. I know in Singapore, everybody talks about it being like high cost of living, right? But actually, Singapore is more like a city-state that has high income, but at the same time, it has low taxes, which we will talk about it later. But I just want to talk about the geographical arbitrage first. Because for people who don't understand what geographical arbitrage is, basically, you are earning a good income from a high cost of living city so that you have enough funds for you to retire at a low cost of living city. And Singapore, the advantage of Singapore is that it is surrounded by low cost of living countries like Malaysia, like Thailand, like Vietnam, Indonesia. I'm sure people who have traveled around the Southeast Asia region will really relate, right? Somehow Singapore, when we use our Singapore currency to convert to other countries' currency and spend it in the Southeast Asia countries, suddenly our purchasing power has increased significantly. And you feel that too as well, right, Reggie? So that is a very nice touch on the Joe arbitrage thing. But I do want to talk about cash flow generation. Because when we are talking about investments, we always talk about asset value, how big of a portfolio size you have. And people are always fixated on the numbers. But you heard of the saying, right? Cash is king, but not really. Actually, cash flow is king. Cash flow generation is actually more important than the asset value itself. Let's say you have like 1 kilogram of gold, super big amount of asset value, right? I mean, how many of you here actually have like 1 kilogram of gold? So gold itself actually is not a cash flow generator. It cannot give you dividends. It does not give you interest. In fact, if you look at it specifically on physical gold, it can be a liability at some point in time, you know, because you need to find a secure place to store it. You need to pay security fees on top of it. So in the first place, it doesn't generate you any kind of cash flow, but you still have to pay like fees for it to be secure in a safe or in a bullion. So really, asset value is really not that important. It's more of the cash flow generation. Another kind of asset is on-state property. People always think that they want to upgrade from HDB to condo for on-state. And then they feel very shook, you know. My asset value suddenly increased from HDB to condo. Okay, my property value. And they consider that part of their investment because they always say like, HDB is your investment asset will forever rise in value, right? Somehow they don't remember that for on-state property, there is actually zero cash flow to talk about because you need money to maintain that property unless you actually rent out your spare bedrooms or you rent out the entire apartment and you stay somewhere else, like your Joe arbitrage, okay? You live in Malaysia, then you rent out your whole apartment, your whole HDB in Singapore. You have to pay for town council fees even if you're staying in it and there's no cash flow to talk about. So when we're talking about cash flow generation, we only look at assets that can really generate and grow itself in value at the same time giving you returns in the form of capital gains or even dividends. So these are more like the equity side. And then for property, it's more of like rental income. So this is cash flow generation concept that I think people should know more of rather than the asset value.
Yeah. And I think one thing that I wanted to clarify is the HDB value rise forever. That was a narrative of Guan Yu. And that was the old generation kind of narrative, right? Lawrence Wong has specifically come out before he was the main guy, you know, like he specifically came out. I remember he got flagged very badly in the early days of his career, you know, because he come out and say, 99 years, that means at the end of 99 years, is zero, right? So he actually came out to say that. I don't know how many people remember that. With that in mind, it fundamentally, cannot say change, more like revert to the reality of the contractual understanding, right? It's not a change, right? It's more like, okay, now it's back to what it was intended for, the whole idea of 99 years. Right. That's a different discussion altogether. And I think we can also talk a little bit about the whole SRS CPF kind of CPF life kind of thing. Because when I look at Singapore, no doubt the grind is very crazy, you know, and maybe I'm not privileged enough to say about the grind anymore because I'm like not living in Singapore anymore. So I do come in every month, you know, to record and do my stuff. But I have a lot of friends last still. So I understand the grind is very serious. But at the end, with that pool of money, you know, with some of the new policies that the government is pushing, it does create cash flow, right? Following what you are saying.
Okay, so adding on to that, right? I think the more important period of generating cash flow is between, let's say you early retire in your 30s and up till you're 60. That is almost like 30 years of life that you need to generate consistent cash flow. Because once you've reached the age of 62 or 63, you can actually tap on your SRS. That is a supplementary retirement scheme. So for those who don't know what the supplementary retirement scheme or SRS is, it's actually a deferred tax scheme for you to actually contribute to the SRS. And in turn, when you reach your retirement age, be it 62 or 63, you can actually withdraw your SRS funds and it will be tax advantage because it will only be taxed at 50% instead of 100%.
But one thing about the tax part, I think we can talk a little bit more about is the CPF life, because CPF is not taxable. I think that's the part that a lot of people don't recognize, right? CPF money is not taxable. Whether is it when it goes in or whether when it comes out, it is no tax. That means the government is not taking any money out of the CPF pool, right? They do pool the money to do whatever that they need to do. That one is a different discussion. But, you know, there's no tax around that. And, hey, I'm a big proponent of CPF life. I think it is great because it is actually the government saying that, you know, okay, now we got to pool the power of the state to come and support the people. Because previously, there's none of this thing. There's no CPF life. You're on your own, right? So big proponent of CPF life. What are your thoughts, Chris?
I think when we are talking about CPF, especially when it's such a complicated topic, let's split it into two parts, right? You actually have two parts of CPF during the age of 55 and during the age of 65. When you reach the age of 55, we always talk about you are able to withdraw your CPF if you meet the terms and conditions. What are terms and conditions? It is when you have at least hit the basic retirement sum. Okay, that is for people who want to pledge their property. And for people who do not want to pledge their property, then at full retirement sum, which is 192,000 for year 2022, only when your CPF is above this full retirement sum, then you can withdraw the excess. So actually age 55 is the first time in your life that you can at least taste your CPF.
Taste.
Because you can start to read. Yeah, I say taste because you always leave a bitter taste when you are young, you know. When you're young, you see, 20% come out of my income, very pain, you know, pay to the government, return my CPF, all that. That's why 55 is when you can start to have your first taste of the CPF. May not be much, depending on how much you're above the CPF FRS, but age 65 is when the real good deals start coming in, which is the CPF life. Because at age 65, you can actually start to unlock your funds, and CPF life is actually a lifelong annuity that pays you consistent cash flows every month until the day that you leave this earth. Because you have saved up so much in your retirement account and it will start depleting from there. And a lot of people don't understand it. That's why they say that they can find a better annuity outside of CPF. But in actual truth, you can't, because nobody can guarantee that amount of cash flow other than the CPF, the government sovereignty fund. So you can see that there's a step up in this kind of cash flow coming from firstly your SRS when you reach the retirement age at 62 or 63. And at 65, you can start to see CPF life payouts. So you actually don't need to work so hard when you're older. Maybe only between your 30s and your 60s, then you need to work extra hard because you don't have additional cash flow. If you have planned for your retirement and save up your SRS, contribute to SRS and top up your CPF, then you have a very fat retirement fund and in your 60s. And that is when people start to scale down on their lifestyle also. Because it's not like when you're younger, you can go and travel the world. Your physical body is able to take up so much hardship, you know. In like 60s, maybe you want to take a more relaxed pace of life and your expense actually go down. Generally, it goes down when you're older. So that is when you don't need to worry so much about the cash flow anymore.
Yeah, so thank you, Chris. Point number two is how much do we need to accumulate, right? Essentially, based on the 4% withdrawal rate, right? So, and then we talk about all these different strategies to accumulate cash flow, essentially to get you to where you want to go. Okay, and bring us to point number three about lean FIRE.
So point number three is prepare yourself mentally to go against the norm. So quite funny, right?
You're speaking about your own personal experience.
I mean, it may be my personal experience, but I can assure you, if you are joining this movement, not only you will receive this from someone outside of your zone, you will also receive this kind of feedback from people who are close to you, even your family and friends. Because remember the first two points, we all talk about numbers, right? How much you need, how much is enough. But the third point is something more psychological, something more mental, because it's about judgment, public judgment around you. You must understand that because this movement is actually going against the norm, and you need to have the mindset the mentality to go against the norm. Because you know the normal people, they will always kind of lifestyle inflate their lives when they get higher paychecks. People around you, they will buy things they don't need to impress people they don't like with the money they don't have. Okay, this is from a famous quote. I don't know who said that, but it resonates quite well with a lot of people because people generally like to impress other people with what they have, their material belongings, whether they have a big house, a big car, or they have high income, then they like to show off, you see, this kind of Hao Lian mentality. In FIRE, we are generally going against the norm because we can live better with less. It's not like we are really sacrificing our lives. It's more about we can really live with the bare minimum or a comfortable living without really having very luxurious lifestyle. And what are you going to do after you have retired for the rest of your life? I think that is the more important question. Are you going to sit at home and play games whole day, or are you going to just watch TV?
Which is not inherently a problem, right? I mean, from a personal choice level, I don't think it's an issue. Yeah, from societal is different, right? When you're managing a society, you don't want a whole bunch of people just playing games all the time, right? But from an individual choice level, I mean, that's why I understand why governments say these kind of things, right? Because they are managing the country and they have a different set of incentive structure. But from a personal person, you just want to hobo and play game. And isn't that what we spend a lot of our youth doing other than studying?
Yeah.
So just play game.
I mean, you brought up a good point actually, because there's really no shame if you want to play computer games all your life, as long as you have enough money and you don't rely on other people. You don't rely on the government. You don't rely on your family to bring in the money for you.
And I want to challenge you on that. I don't even think that is shame. I think that's power. It's more of a, if you rely on other people, then you are reliant on their system, right? You're reliant on their expectation, you know. But if you have all these, right, then it's like, you know, I do what I want, right? There's a reason why the stereotypical idea of a lot of the wealthy people is they're very snobbish. But if you think about it, they have the resources, they have the power, you know, they really don't need to please you. Right. So they don't need to please. They don't need to be happy. It's fine. It doesn't matter. Right. So by extension, I think the idea here is if you have the resources and you fire, you do your thing and you want to play game, you know, you're not relying on any other system, then, you know, okay, but you're relying on the financial system. That's a caveat. Huh? But you're not relying on like your family or the government, then whatever they say is whatever they say. Lah, right? It's not you. Okay. And the truth is different people are different. And if you are very lean on certain things, you have no room to try. You have no room to play around. And I did an episode about this, right? Talking about frugality, right? So how frugality is so accentuated. So yeah, you can check out those things. Yeah. So any last things to add on point number three, Chris?
Remember, I talk about the judgment from your friends and families, because sometimes in your eyes, you think that you are hustling and doing something for a greater purpose, but in other people's eyes, right, you're just someone who is a lazy bum, right? Because you are trying not to work, because they have worked their whole lives up to 65 and here you are doing something different from them, and you'll face this kind of judgment from your close circle, okay? Even your friends. So I would say, once you are embarking on this journey, it's more important
change.
To... yeah. Essentially, that's my point, right? Because
yes.
You must always remember to surround yourself with like-minded people. People who are chasing the FIRE movement, people who are pursuing Ikigai, people who are having an entrepreneurship mindset, because they see things quite differently from the normal salaried worker. Because the cliche saying always goes, right, you're the average of your closest five friends. So if you hang out around with successful people, people who have retired early, and people who have listened to the Financial Coconut podcast, then most likely there are people you want to hang out with and surround yourself with positive vibes. Okay, you don't want to hang out around people who are always negative, criticize your ideas, putting you down, because that will actually put you in a very bad light and bad shape. So I think it's important to find your community in this space when you are chasing this kind of early retirement life.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm going to sum up the 3 points. I think Chris went to a lot of examples to get us to this whole idea of finding success in lean FIRE. And the 3 points is, point number one is, how much do you really need to live comfortably? You need to figure this out. Because when you figure this out, then maybe you realize, oh, you don't really need a lot, because the whole idea of lean FIRE is, what do you need, right? So that's a comfort part. There's not a lot of excess that we're aiming for, we're just going lean. So how much do you need to live comfortably? Point number two is, how much do you then need to accumulate based on this comfort level that you're going for? And so far, the standard practice is a 4% drawdown. And you can learn a little bit more about some of these FIRE topics on Chris's channel. I think he went to a lot more than me, you know, on some of these things, how to calculate and all that. But a quick tip, you know, maybe geo arbitrage can work, right? It's not always you live in Singapore, then you work in Singapore, you have to retire in Singapore. Because, hey, if you go somewhere else, it's a little bit more affordable. Maybe the amount that you need to achieve the comfortable life that you seek is reduced massively. And brings us to point number three, and that is to prepare yourself that, you know, you are going against the norm and not everybody will agree with you. And like what Chris said, maybe eventually you will change your friends, lah, which I actually vividly agree, right? Eventually, your social circle will shape towards the goals that you are seeking. So yeah, with that, I hope you learned something useful today. See ya. Hey, I hope you learned something useful today and truly appreciate that you took time off to better your life with the Financial Coconut. Knowledge is that much more powerful and interesting when shared, debated, and discussed. Join our community Telegram group, follow us on our socials. And if there was one thing I hope you can do, it would be to share this on your socials. Help us reach to more audience. We need to grow the network. We need to get bigger numbers so that we can continue to create great content and fund ourselves, essentially. So this is a business plea. As you love our network, I hope that you can help us grow and share this on your socials. I'll see you next week. So yes, check out Chris's channel. I think he has covered quite a lot of things and he's gone viral a few times. So that is amazing. And we had a good time talking about lean FIRE. I think FIRE as a concept is a thing. Like, a lot of people have bought into it, especially when it comes to like lean FIRE and trying to like explore living in another country and all that jazz. I get it. I get the beauty of it, but maybe don't over-idolize it also. It could be a target. It could be a goal. But in the process of doing it, recognize that if you're going to go very, very lean on your life, then it limits yourself to explore. Right? There's one other episode that I did about frugality. I think it was frugality as a case against frugality. You can check out the earlier episodes. But yeah, that's it for today. Okay, and of course, with FIRE, you always have to look at investing, right? And a lot of people in the FIRE landscape will look at the broadly diversified portfolio, you know, just kind of whole and all the way and all that, right? So I get that. And that's what I want to talk about next week. So next week, we're going to talk a little bit about the 80-20 portfolio. So I will share with you a little bit more next week and why I think there are some assumptions that we need to recognize. And there are some assumptions that we need to think about when we are thinking